This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try.
Hello, heathens everywhere, and of course, heathens is in quotes. There really is no such thing. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and welcome to the newest Free Thought Radio.
And I'm Dan Barker, your friendly neighborhood atheist of the airwaves. This show, Free Thought Radio, is broadcast from Madison, Wisconsin. We also broadcast in other parts of the country, including different parts of New York State, in Missouri, in Michigan, and in California. Hello to all of you who might be listening as you're exercising or walking or cooking or thinking, listening to the podcast.
Free Thought Radio is the weekly production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, and Dan and I are the co-directors of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, and I am an original co-founder, along with my mother, Ann Nicole Gaylor.
And I'm a newcomer. I just came on in 1984.
And Ann is now 86 and still making trouble. And FFRF has two purposes. We work to educate the public about non-theism, and we work to keep religion out of government. And we have over 19,000 members in North America. We started with the original two, so that seems big to me. But we have aspirations to be much larger, because one in five citizens in the United States, adults, is now considered non-religious, identifies as non-religious, and as many as one in three young people.
So our group could have 20 million people in it.
Sure could.
Our guest today is going to be Jerry Coyne. We've had him on the show before. He's the author of the popular book about evolution. It's called Why Evolution is True. And we're going to catch up with Jerry about some of his recent writings and recent activities.
And we've had him on before, I think only once before, but this is the first time that Jerry has returned to Free Thought Radio since becoming one of FFRF's honorary officers. And he joins very distinguished list of people, including Dawkins and Katha Pollitt and Dan Dennett and so on. And we're really pleased to have him lend that kind of support to FFRF.
This is the February 2nd, 2013 show of Free Thought Radio. And today, February 2nd, is the 101st birthday of the composer Burton Lane. He was born February 2nd, 1912. We interviewed Burton Lane's widow, Lynn Lane, a couple of years ago on this show. Burton Lane was a non-believing songwriter. He was best known for the musicals On a Clear Day, You Can See Forever, and the musical Finian's Rainbow, on which he collaborated with the free-thinking lyricist Yip Harburg.
And he's also the person who discovered Judy Garland.
You mean the young Frances Gum was her name, right?
And accompanied her on the piano while she had her first audition. And Burton Lane wrote, did he not write Somewhere Over the Rainbow?
No, he didn't.
Oh.
No, Yip Harburg wrote
But Burton Lane didn't work on those.
On that one. But he wrote Finian's Rainbow. So listen today for some of Burton Lane's music while we have our outro music during today's show.
And speaking of rainbows, it appears that Boy Scouts of America is considering dropping its national exclusion of gays as undesirable members. And that was just announced, and they're having their board meeting in February. What a slap in the face that they're not reconsidering their shunning and exclusion of non-believers and atheists. And they openly announced when they said, we've had a lot of pressure on this about discriminating against gays. We're going to reconsider it at our biannual board meeting. They said we would not reconsider the exclusion of atheists and freethinkers because they obviously put duty to God above their duty to children.
So there's a gap in the rainbow still then.
And who's on the bottom of the social totem pole, as I always say, we're making headway in society, but atheists, you can still discriminate against us and say we're undesirable and send boys home in tears from recruitment meetings because their families are not religious. It's just as bad to discriminate against atheist kids as it is to discriminate against gay families. And why do we have to even state that very obvious fact?
You know, the homophobes used to say that homosexuality is a choice. Well, isn't atheism a choice too? If they're going to be free to make that choice.
So it's good that they're considering one thing. And of course, it's too little too late because they're saying that the local troops could continue discriminating, but they as a national group, it won't be a top-down policy if this is what the change that they adopt. But it's kind of demoralizing. The New York Times had an editorial chiding them for not going far enough. And that editorial didn't go far enough. It didn't even mention the exclusion of atheists. And usually both of these things have been discussed together because they were the two discriminatory policies of Boy Scouts of America. And so we have an action alert out at ffrf.org. You go to the news link and drop down to action alert. And it tells you how to contact Boy Scouts of America. We suggest you give them a phone call. And also, this is a good topic to write letters to the editor about, make comments on news sites about, social network, and so on. This is unacceptable. And I would also point out that, you know, it isn't what you believe that makes you a good person. It's what you do. Helping that elderly person across the street makes you a good person. But just saying, I believe in God, does not. It's morally bankrupt. And the Boy Scouts are placing dogma above children. And they are even think it's good that they're hateful toward people who have an intellectual position that says, show me, I'm not going to accept on faith your religious claims. And that's what free thought means.
So they still deserve a badge of dishonor for
yes,
their discrimination.
Yes, they do, and very disappointing. And then speaking of
dinosaurs and old...
You've run into this recently.
Well, just this last week, I had to cancel an event. I was invited by a Catholic men's organization in St. Paul, Minnesota, to do a debate on the historicity of the New Testament and Jesus with a Catholic theologian. And I was all ready to advertise it to our members when I discovered that it's not only a male forum, but the event itself excludes women. I was going to go to a debate at which you couldn't attend. You'd have to sit out in the car, Annie Laurie, if you went with me.
And this, tell us again where this debate was and who's putting it on.
Well, it's called the Argument of the Month Club in St. Paul, Minnesota.
And it's sponsored by a Roman Catholic.
A Roman Catholic and held in a church. And so they have every right to have an all-male group, right? But I thought this was a public event. They would be open to everybody. But they said fathers can bring their sons. Priests and seminarians get preference, but no women are allowed. So I had to cancel.
So, Dan, thank you. I mean, there were a lot of men who wouldn't even think that this there was something wrong with that.
If you want to read about it, it's the most recent blog up at FFRF's webpage.
So that's also the news link, and there's a drop down and look for blog. And so that brings us to another big sexist. We haven't featured the person that you love to hate on this show for a while, and that is Pat Robertson, who made some ridiculous comments about women and women's appearances. And we have that
a little bit
clipping,
of
don't we?
A woman came to a preacher that I know, and she was awful looking.
Oh,
I mean, her hair was all torn up, and she was overweight and looked terrible, clothes bad and everything. She said, "Oh, Reverend, my husband has started to drink." And the preacher said, "Madam, if I was married to you, I'd start to drink,
oh,
too."
Oh, my.
We need to cultivate romance, darling, and it just isn't something to just lie there. Well, I'm married to him, so he's got to take me slatternly looking. You've got to fix yourself up, look pretty, look alert.
So how's your love life, Pat Robertson? You're looking pretty attractive yourself these days.
Now, if we want to talk about something nicer, and we our attractive attorney, Patrick Elliott, had a very good piece in the Wisconsin State Journal this week about how vouchers hurt public schools. We hope you saw it. It's also going to be, it's online. If you go to FFRF in the news, that's also under the news link. So you can read all about it. And Patrick was responding to another op-ed in the Wisconsin State Journal. And he pointed out that some of the Milwaukee schools that are getting public money and vouchers, according to their IRS foundings, we have Clara Mohammed School, which is a Quran-guided journey toward global active citizenship funded almost exclusively through vouchers. Only in 2011, only 0.8% of its students, one out of 123, tested proficient in math, and only 5% tested proficient in reading. He gives the example of another principal at Carter's Christian Academy in Milwaukee, where the records show that the principal received $109,000 in compensation, and yet they are using Christian textbook publishers, Abeka Books, and present everything from God's point of view. This is public money going toward vouchers, and you probably saw the news if you're in Wisconsin this week that Governor Walker is pushing vouchers big time. It's a big fight, and we see that schools that get voucher money actually get more money per student than our public schools. Our public schools are robbed to feed this money to mostly parochial schools. So it's going to be a big issue that we are all going to be paying attention to.
And now, Patrick was in the news again just last week on a TV station in Arkansas. He, on behalf of the foundation, was complaining about a public school there in Arkansas that's allowing ministers on campus to talk with the children. So this is a story out of Little Rock. It's KTHV 11 about the Conway, Arkansas schools.
Should religious leaders be allowed to visit your kids at school?
For now, the Conway School District is putting a temporary stop to visitors like religious leaders to all of their schools while officials evaluate policy. Now, all of this sparked by some complaints from Conway parents to a Wisconsin-based organization called the Freedom from Religion Foundation.
Conway parent Marcia Kelly recalls a pastor visiting her daughter's school for lunch last year at Carl Stewart Middle.
I'm a real strong Catholic, and I thought that was just something that was good for my daughter to see, especially.
But parent Karen Collins disagrees.
Just place a school, and they're here to learn. And I understand you want to save the world, but leave school alone.
A debate now before the district, after reports that youth pastors have been allowed to visit with students at lunch at Carl Stewart Middle and Ruth Doyle Intermediate School.
And if you look at the overall context of why they're there and it being a recurring practice, it certainly seems to be to advance their religious mission. To use the public grounds for that purpose, I think, is a big problem.
Patrick Elliott represents the Freedom from Religion Foundation. He says two concerned parents contacted them about these visits.
Parents don't know what's being said to their middle school student.
What we're going to do is make sure that the policies on their face are constitutional.
Jeff Mateer is with the Liberty Institute, a nonprofit legal group from Texas, now working with the district on its visitor rules.
Now, the Freedom from Religion Foundation says they have heard reports from at least one parent who says a youth pastor approached a child who was not part of their group.
As for the Wisconsin Foundation raising the issue, we're told they have more than 100 members in Arkansas, and it was some of them who shared their concerns. Now, we asked your thoughts on Facebook on a religious leader in school. April says, I think if the kids want to talk to one, they should be able to, even if it's at school. But Molly says they do not belong in public schools. If you want your child to be around them, do it on your own time.
We have a lot of predatory missionaries and principals who are in cahoots with them, letting them wander around in the lunchrooms. This is sometimes at lower levels as well as high schools, and we deal with this around the country a lot. So I hope to stop that soon. And coming up, we're going to hear a poem, right, Dan? And we are going to also hopefully have a little bit of time to celebrate the music of
Burton Lane, which we're hearing right now.
And then we'll be talking
with the author and the biology professor, Jerry Coyne. His book is called Why Evolution is True. I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. Stay tuned for more Free Thought Radio.
Ask for a sample issue of Free Thought today and find out more about the Freedom from Religion Foundation at ffrf.org or phone 1-800-335-4021. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
Saul Williams is a poet, an actor, a musician, and a performer, and he was recently a guest on the progressive radio show hosted by Matt Rothschild, who's the editor of the Progressive magazine. During the show, when Matt asked Saul to recite a new poem, Saul responded with this.
This is an unedited poem, a journal entry. Some thoughts travel from distant places, are not born within our borders, and must pass through heightened security, fortified by age-old tradition, the norms of societal culture, the misgivings of prejudice and misplaced judgment, in order to arrive peacefully in our minds. Our minds are high-walled fortresses where security councils gather to preserve comfort, enforce what we have been taught to value, and discern and determine what is real. We depend on our minds to guide and aid us from one day to the next. Some of us see our minds like muscles that we exercise with theorems, riddles, thoughts, and thought processes. We gather and store information. We play word games, rap, solve problems, work to the best of our abilities. We also accept or reject labels and categorizations at face value. Black, white, terrorist, suspect, gay, straight, religious, Republican. We sometimes choose lifestyles based upon those accepted labels and categorizations, those that we identify with, which then take the form of beliefs. Beliefs are the police of the mind. They are either uniformed or universal, armed or unarmed. They hold the power to confiscate material they consider hazardous or incredible. They profile experience and information as nonsense. Get out of here. They convene regularly with the Thought Security Council and act according to their constitution of what is real or unreal, possible or impossible, and they are sometimes and often mistaken. My question to you today is, what is your mind's immigration policy? Do you detain foreign thoughts that may have entered your mind illegally against the wishes of your parents, pastors, teachers, leaders, or perhaps simply against the security of your own comfort? Are there other thoughts that you have perhaps allowed to go unchecked, unquestioned, because they seem aligned with your so-called identity? Are you certain that you are not a victim of identity fraud?
Really cute. He said it's not quite a poem, but it sure reads like it. So that was Saul Williams' journal entry. And speaking of two people who did not allow identity or thought theft, we have Yip Harburg and Burton Lane. We are celebrating Burton Lane's birthday.
101st birthday today.
The songwriter. And this is a song that both freethinkers, Harburg and Lane, wrote together from the musical The Finian's Rainbow. It's really cute. The Bagats.
I got it. We got it.
The Lord made Adam, the Lord made Eve. He made them both a little bit naive. They lived as free as the summer breeze, without pajamas and without chemise. Until they stumbled on the apple trees.
Then she looked at him. He looked at her.
And they knew immediately what the world was for.
He said, give me my cane. He said, give me my hat.
The time has come to begin the begat.
The begat, the begat.
So the begat came, and the begat ate the ruby, got the rabble and the Tower of Babel.
They begat the coins.
They begat old rocks.
And they begat the people who believed in stars.
Lordy, lordy, how they did begat.
How they begat.
Even more than that, when the begat got to getting on the par, they begat the daughters of the D.A.R. The begat the fathers of the bourgeoisie.
Who begat the misbegotten D.I.P.
They begat. Boom, boom, they begat. Boom.
It was pleasing the Jezebel, pleasing the room.
It pleased the League of Women Shoppers in Duluth.
Though the movie censors tried the facts to hide, the movie goers up and multiplied.
Lordy, lordy, how they multiply.
How they multiply.
How they multiply. Soon it swept the world.
Every land and lingo, it became the rage.
It was bigger than bingo.
The white to death. The red begat.
The folks who should have stood in bed begat.
The Greeks begat. The Swedes begat.
Why, even Britishers and Tweed begat.
And lordy, lordy, what the seeds begat.
The Laps and Lithuanians
begat.
Scranton, Pennsylvanians
begat.
Strict vegetarians
begat.
Honorary Arians
begat.
Starting from Genesis,
they begat.
Heroes and menaces.
Begat.
Fat filibusterers.
Begat.
Income tax adjusterers.
Begat.
Was natural and natural to begat. And sometimes a bachelor.
He begat.
It didn't matter which way they begat. Sons of habituates. Begat. So bless them all.
So bless them all.
Who go to bat.
Who go to bat.
And heed the call.
That's the Burton Lane Yip Harburg song from Finian's Rainbow, The Begats. I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. We're going to be back after the break to talk with Jerry Coyne, the author of Why Evolution is True.
The things that you're liable to read in the Bible, it ain't necessarily so. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And we have with us on the phone, for the second time, Jerry Coyne. He's a professor of biology who deals a lot with the intelligent design issue. He's published a lot of papers, especially on the theory of evolution. He's currently professor at the University of Chicago in ecology and evolution. He's author of a textbook and the best-selling science popularization, Why Evolution is True. And he has a blog, a website blog called Why Evolution is True. So welcome back to Free Thought Radio, Jerry.
Good to be back. How are you guys doing?
Pretty good. And I think Dan forgot to mention two important points. And
well,
one
I wrote them on your notes,
Jerry, that you won our Emperor Has No Clothes Award.
Yes, that's my proudest moment, I have to say.
Well, thank you. And also, you've been very kind to now join FFRF's Board of Honorary Officers, Directors. And so we're very pleased to have you as part of that.
Well, I'm honored to be on it, so.
Now, so Darwin's Day is coming up. And we thought maybe we'd first ask you about this House resolution for Darwin Day, if you've been following that.
Just a little bit. I mean, I think it's a good idea, but in principle, it's a good idea. I think it's doomed, given that 40% of the American people accept evolution. I'd be curious to see what happens to it. I mean, maybe you can tell me. My prediction was it was going to die in committee. I don't know if that's happened or not.
Well, this isn't the first time. Pete Stark introduced it before, and it died.
Mm-hmm.
And now representative from New Jersey, I think he's a Quaker, a very liberal man, a representative named Holt, has reintroduced it. So I guess we have to wait and see how our representatives think over there.
Yeah, well, my view is that they would rather die than register a public vote, either one way or the other, on Darwin Day. If you're for it, you lose a lot of constituents. If you're against it, you look anti-science. And so the best way to scotch that is keep it off the floor. That's what I predicted, but I'm not sure what will happen. But given that, only 40% of the American public, and really 16% if you count the true naturalistic evolutionists, except scientist's view of Darwinism, I don't hold out a lot of hope that this is going to be passed by the public will.
Well, we just keep persisting, and
yes,
look at the UK, where their 10-pound note has Darwin on it. One of these days, America will wake up.
Of course, he was British, so that's one thing in his favor.
That's true, but had he been American, it still wouldn't be on the $5 bill. Well,
okay, but on the bright side, there's a tiny silver lining here. Somebody has put up one of those White House petitions, if you get enough signatures. There's a White House petition right now, whitehouse.gov, to deny Darwin Day, asking Obama not to have anything to do with Darwin Day. And the last time I checked, they had about 100 signatures. So maybe that tells
us.
They need, what do they need, 10,000 or 25,000 in order to get it to him?
I think probably the creationists haven't gotten a hold of that website yet. Because when they do, they could mobilize hundreds of people. But that will have no effect on Obama, of course. He accepts evolution. But I don't think he's made any public pronouncement on the bill, and I don't think he will. Or on the resolution. I guess he doesn't have anything to do with it.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah.
Now, Jerry, you have a debate coming up. Mm-hmm. Why don't you tell us about that?
Well, yes, the last day of this sort of multi-university, multi-skeptical organization tour I'm doing in Georgia and South Carolina, and they've asked me to debate a Lutheran theologian, actually somebody from the evangelical, I'm not sure I get this right, the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America Theological Seminary, which is actually only two blocks from my office in Chicago. So they've asked me to debate somebody from that seminary on the topic of are science and religion compatible, which I think is on February 8th in Charleston.
So what does a theologian know about evolution, or about anything for that matter?
Well, this theologian, her name is Leah Schweitz. I've never met her before. She seems, from what I can gather on the internet, to be, you know, a really nice person. She is associated with the program that they have at that seminary about religion and science. And they publish a journal, I believe, called Zygon, which is also a journal of religion and science. So she is, I think, in charge of that program. But if you go to the website and look for what's happening, there's not much tangible that you can really find, just a series of lectures and things. It's all supported, of course, by the nefarious Templeton Foundation, whose goal is to sort of subsume religion and science, or meld them together.
So she thinks they're compatible then? Sorry? She thinks religion and science are compatible then.
Well, she's taking the opposite side of me, so I assume so, because, of course, my well-known view is that they're not compatible. I haven't been able to find much about her views from her publications or her website, so I'm just sort of shooting in the dark here, and I really don't want to attack a person. This is it's really even not even billed as a debate. It's supposed to be a discussion. I give my 25 minutes of argument, she gives hers, and then we're supposed to sit down and have a genial conversation that's moderated. I found out actually this morning it's all going to be in a church, which seems a little bit biased to me. But
so if they start with prayer, keep your head up, huh?
Yeah.
Well, I think theology is a subject with no object. You know what theologians actually study? They just read other theologians. They study their own self. It's like a circular kind of thinking.
It is actually. And, you know, I've had this long project because I'm going to write a book centered around this compatibility issue. And I was told, read this and that and this and that, and all the theologians, Kierkegaard, you know, the ones that are interested in science. And I quickly realized that I was reading the same thing over and over again.
Yeah, because they don't have any empirical methods or testing or falsifiability or repeatability. They don't have any, you know, they don't have anything that you would call even remotely scientific.
Yeah, well, they would take issue with that. You know, there is a sort of subschool of what they call natural theology, which claims that there are phenomena in the universe which attest to the existence of God. Now, it used to be creationism and geocentric solar system, but of course those have been dispelled, and then there was Adam and Eve and the flood. That didn't happen. So now they're on things like the fine-tuning of the universe. The physical constants are such that we had to appear, or that we could have appeared as humans, and therefore those constants must have been forged by God. So that's evidence. The other one, which Francis Collins, the head of the National Institutes of Health, likes to use, is the moral law, that humans have this instinctive morality, and that could not have happened unless God gave it to us. So,
yeah.
And there are other things as well. I mean, the effectiveness of mathematics, the fact that there are natural laws. To those who truly believe, these are evidences of God. But, of course, you have to start off believing in God in the first place.
Yep.
And that's why it's so profoundly unscientific in the first place.
And for the rest of us, those are just... No, they're not even evidence, but they're arguments for a gap, really. They're God of the gap. How do you explain this?
That's what it all comes down to, that for the theologian, ignorance is God. I think, I'm not sure who said this, but for the scientist, you know, it's all about evidence. So.
Mm-hmm. Now, Jerry, I last saw you in Mexico City in November,
mm-hmm.
and you were giving a very excellent... presentation, you know, why evolution is true, a PowerPoint. We have an informed listener audience, but given these terrible numbers of Americans who reject evolution, can we go over some of these basics again?
You mean for the evidence?
Yes, and talk about why evolution.
Well, we only have about 8 minutes left here. So.
Why evolution is true.
Okay. So you want like a 4 minute?
No, I'm just, I mean, what do you say to the, I'm sure you're still running into them, college student who is denying evolution?
Well, there's a variety of tactics. I mean, the easiest thing to do is say, read my book, because it's all in there, which really is what they should do.
Send me a free copy, and I'll read it. Is what they should.
Well, you know, I've been sending out lots of copies, including people who gave money to the FFRF. So.
Oh, that's right. Yes,
yeah, so,
thank you.
Yeah, we got a fair number of donors, I think, for your organization.
Yeah, this was in response to FFRF's lawsuit against electioneering by churches. The IRS.
Right. Yeah, I've been vastly impressed by what you guys have been doing. So,
well, thank you.
People that are real, I mean, the first thing to do when you're faced with somebody that wants to know the answer to that question is to determine if they're sincere. I've been fooled by this. Just in the past couple of weeks, a Jewish kid called me up and he said, you know, I've been told that Hitler was motivated by Darwinism and I'm so confused and, you know, can you help me out here? Because I really want to believe in evolution. But if it caused the Holocaust, I can't. And I said, well, that's a bunch of hooey. But it turned out that he actually was trying to fool me, and he didn't believe in evolution, and he wanted me to give up my career and my ideas because it motivated, you know, the Holocaust.
He
it took me 3 or 4 phone calls, and then a bunch of his friends started calling me. And so it helps to suss out people's motivations. And if you know they're religious right off the bat, you don't want to give them the time of day. Because they're not being sincere, but there are sincere people. I'll tell them to read my book, and if they want to know more, I will try to answer their questions as best I can in the time I have.
Of course, fossils and comparative genetics and, you know, the structure, homologous structures, and on and on. There's plenty of evidence for evolution.
Yeah, I mean, I have a chapter of a book on each of those. Everybody thinks about the fossil record, but there's embryology. There's developmental biology, there's the existence of vestigial organs, there's bad design, and especially biogeography, which nobody thinks about, the distribution of plants and animals on the surface of the globe. That's a very powerful line of evidence for evolution that is so powerful, in fact, that I've never seen a creationist even try to rebut it. So if you're open-minded and you read all this stuff, and it's not rocket science, I mean, really anybody can understand modern evolutionary biology. There's no way you can reject it. So it's just really sad that only 16% of Americans accept evolution the way that we scientists do.
Well, after today's show, it'll be 16% plus 10 more. So.
One can hope.
Well, we're going to take a break. We're talking with Jerry Coyne, a science professor and author of the book Why Evolution is True. I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. And after the break, Jerry, I want to ask you about your blog, your Why Evolution is True blog. Stay tuned for more Free Thought Radio.
As Mark Twain said, faith is believing what you know ain't so. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And we're talking with Jerry Coyne, author of Why Evolution is True. And Jerry has a very popular blog, science blog, called Why Evolution is True, and it's at whyevolutionistrue.com. So, Jerry, what are some of the, I guess, issues or popular things that come up on your blog?
Well, I started it off. It's actually an interesting story. I don't have much time. It was going to be something I posted once every 3 or 4 weeks, a new piece of evidence for evolution would come up. I would put it there to support my book of the same name, and it turned out that it just blew up all out of control. And I started posting about things I like, food, cats, biology, atheism. I think atheism and biology are the two dominant topics, but it's a big mix of things. In terms of biology, well, there's a lot of things. The new bird fossil I haven't yet posted on, which is supposed to overturn our whole view of how flight originated, but doesn't really. Can we clone a Neanderthal? There was that big kerfuffle, and the answer is no. We're nowhere near that. and with the atheism.
But I've seen some Neanderthals walking down the street recently.
Well, yeah, I mean, actually, it's been said that if you shaved one and put him on the bus, he was not resistant. So that may well be true, but we don't have the ability to resurrect ancient animals or plants of any sort.
Except in the movies.
DNA. People are under a real misconception about that, which is due to the popular press. It just doesn't understand the problems involved with that. So.
Now, Jerry, when you spoke at this the second convention in Mexico City in November of atheism, and I was there, and then you got up a terrific, like a travelogue. I mean, your blog, as you said, it started off with that evolution, but now it's you took pictures of food. It's really fantastic.
Yeah, people like that. I didn't intend that to happen, but I just, it may be a bit solipsistic, but I just think of this as an extension of myself now. And myself is more than just a biologist and more than just an atheist. I like food, I like wine, I like to travel, and people seem to like my sharing them with it. So it's like, I think it's the seventh or eighth most popular blog on WordPress now, which is very gratifying to me. But I never try to draw traffic. I just try to write what's interesting to me, and it turned out it interested some other people as well. So
now, you said there's some hot button issues, and you get some unusual. You've had some responses that you weren't expecting. Can you give us some examples?
Yeah, well, there's two of them in particular. One of them is the issue of free will, which to me seems to be a no-brainer as a scientist. And we're all molecules. Our molecules obey the laws of physics. Our behavior depends on those molecules. Ergo, our behaviors are determined by the laws of physics. We cannot affect those laws in such a way that we can make a choice between A and B. And, I mean, I think that's the way it is. But when you tell people they don't have free will, it elicits a tremendous distress in many of them. And that's been a huge source of controversy on my site. People, you know, most people will admit that, yes, we are physically determined in what we do, but let's redefine free will in another way so we can really say we have it, which I regard as sort of philosophical shenanigans, almost like theology, actually.
You'd have to deny the laws of causation. You'd have to.
Well, they'll accept them, but they say, let's call free will something else. Let's call it the evolution of a complex organism.
Huh.
But that obviates the whole historical notion of what free will was. And as you know, of course, it's intimately connected with religion. Your ability to choose Jesus or not determines whether or not you fry or you play your harp. And
unless you're a Calvinist. A Calvinist believe in predestination.
Yeah, that's true. I don't think, well, yeah, I'm not sure what the point is on free will, but you don't have the ability to choose where you go.
Yeah.
And Lutherans, to some extent, seem to be like that. But, for skeptics, it amazes me. And I think it strikes at the heart of your view of yourself as a person. And if you don't think you can make choices, it's distressing. Almost as bad as knowing you're going to die and not go anywhere. So that's, been a real topic. Philosophers have been going at me saying I don't really understand all the philosophical sophistication of the view. And it's all very reminiscent of theology, where I'm also told that I don't understand the sophistication of theological views. So there's that issue.
You have to read more books of theology, then it'll dawn on you.
Sorry?
You have to read more theology books, and then
there's no end to that. I mean, I've read for a year, a solid year of theology, and I finally, my craw is full of it. People keep saying, well, you got to read this, and you got to read that, and I read this and that, and I don't learn anything. And Dan, you're right. I mean, it is a subject without an object.
And what was the second? You said there was another
the other one,
hot
well,
button.
It's an issue which everybody has a hot button. Related to is the Israel-Palestine question. So it may be because, I was born in Jewish culture. I'm an atheist now, but I still consider myself a cultural Jew. So I tend to take the view that Israel is being unfairly compared to Palestine. I mean, there's a double standard in that area. The Palestinians can get away with things that Israelis aren't allowed to. And I don't really understand that. But it turns out, not only my website, but in academics and intellectual culture as a whole, that it's really not right to even say a word in favor of Israel. So some of those posts have elicited a lot of comments. I try not to argue with people. I'll have my say and let them fight it out in the comments. But it's really surprised me how much leeway the Palestinians are given.
Well, let's hope someday that the Middle East will continue to evolve. We're talking with Jerry Coyne, author of the book, Why Evolution is True. Thank you for being a guest on our show today, Jerry.
Sure, my pleasure.
And good luck. If you believe in luck or free will, good luck in your upcoming debate on religion.
Okay, thanks very much.
This is a little Count Basie playing the Burton Lane song, Burton Lane Yip Harburg song, Old Devil Moon. We also want to thank our engineer today, Dave McCann, and our announcer, Buzz Kemper. This show is recorded in Madison, Wisconsin, broadcast on weekends, and then podcast. You can sign up at ffrf.org/radio.
Ask for more information or join us at ffrf.org. You can also phone 1-800-335-4021. And your membership in the Freedom from Religion Foundation, which is deductible for income tax purposes, supports Free Thought Radio, supports our litigation, the IRS lawsuit Jerry Coyne mentioned, supports our growing staff, 13+. So tune in next week for more Rational Radio and Blasphemous Broadcasting.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.
I hope someday